It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, we'll check out an effort to bring more diverse faculty to the UW-Madison.
First, what's known as the Right to Work Bill is quickly making its way through the state legislature and continues to be the most talked about story in Wisconsin today. The state Senate is currently taking up that bill, and a vote could be coming shortly.
This comes after a Senate subcommittee voted in favor of the bill yesterday after a public hearing that was cut short. Meanwhile, protests continue at the Capitol. Labor advocates are making the case that Right to Work will take the state backwards and drive down wages.
WPR state government reporter Sean Johnson joins us now from the Capitol. Sean, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome.
Well, you're coming to us live from the Capitol Rotunda. Set the stage for us. What's been going on at the Capitol today?
Today, we started out, I guess, with a big union protest on the steps of the Capitol. Not Act 10 big. I mean, there weren't tens of thousands of people out there rallying outside the Capitol, but you had the Department of Administration estimated a couple thousand people out on the steps. And, you know, I guess it at times got pretty fiery. One of the speakers there said, I'm tired of going to these rallies and losing. If we really want to get what we want, we need to just stand still and essentially halt our labor in order to remind people of our worth. So that got the crowd excited there for a bit. A few people started chanting strike. But, I mean, That died down, and as I talk to you right now from the rotunda of the Wisconsin State Capitol, it's a pretty small crowd.
And it sounds pretty quiet right now, and the Senate currently in session right now, right?
It is, and actually, I mean, much louder right now over next to the Senate. I've backed away from there a little bit. You get a lot of people who were in the public gallery today get kicked out for disrupting debate. It happened as soon as they started debating in the Senate. The person stood up and started to criticize Republicans for pushing the bill, asking where it came from. They were escorted out. Happened again. And Senate President Mary Lozick threatened to clear the Senate gallery. She didn't. There are still people up there. There's a line of people wanting to get in, but it has happened several times today. Since then, that somebody stands up in the gallery, makes some noise. You can't do that under Senate rules, and they're taken out.
Do you have a sense of the discussion in the Senate so far?
The discussion in the Senate so far has, I guess, the Democratic point has been, where did this come from? Who asked for this? Why are you doing this? And the Republican points from Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, the author of this bill, has been, this is modernizing our labor laws, that we are going to give people the choice of whether or not they want to belong to a union.
And when is a vote expected?
I don't know. I mean, I would think Democrats would want to keep the discussion going a while, likely. There's a lot of people watching this, and so they're going to go through and offer amendments, knowing that they're going to fail, but to make a point. So, for example, right now or just before I came out to talk to you, they were offering an amendment that would have restored a bunch of language in state law that this bill would take out that basically describes our labor policy here in Wisconsin. Talks about striving for labor peace, things like that. I mean, it's akin to what happened, what was taken out of the UW's mission statement when there was that big slap over the Wisconsin idea. That was called a mistake by the Walker administration, and so Democrats are saying, look, clearly this must have been a mistake too. Senator Fitzgerald didn't budge, said, no, actually, this language didn't really do anything, and so we're taking it out, we're getting rid of it.
I want to go back to yesterday for a moment, the hearing that was going on with the committee, and it came to an abrupt ending earlier than expected. What happened last night?
It did. I mean, you already had a scheduled end time for the committee, which, you know, they didn't used to do in the Wisconsin legislature. They were going to hold the committee hearing from 10 in the morning until 7 at night. So there were a number of union members and advocates who were, when they were cut off, they were going to stand up and demand to speak. And not given that chance, they weren't going to leave until police took them out. Senator Steve Noss, who chairs the committee, saw a write-up of their plans in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He referred to it as a credible threat. And at about 6:20 last night, really caught everybody by surprise, he adjourned the public hearing, immediately called for a vote, and the bill passed 3-1 with one of the Democratic senators present there, Chris Larson, I believe, not voting as he tried in vain to keep the committee hearing going.
It sounds like last night, and maybe just in general, there was concern on the Republican side that a replay of the prolonged high emotions from the Act 10 days could be repeating itself now, not something that Republicans want. How big a shadow is Act 10 casting and how things play out now with Right to Work?
Yeah, everybody's talking about Act 10, for sure, and everybody has their own memories of it. It's been 4 years now. You know, to hear Republicans and Democrats describe the events of Act 10, the protests in particular, you think that they were watching two different events. It has come up on the Senate floor today quite a bit. Democrats were really pushing Republicans to say, hey, where was this credible threat? I just want to know what the threat was. These people were going to exercise civil disobedience. They weren't there to hurt you, and they never disrupted the committee hearing during the day, which is true. But Republicans said, you know, when you get in a close situation like that, and you have police carrying people out against their will, laying their hands on people, it changes the atmosphere in a hurry, and they didn't want to deal with that.
What are Republicans saying today as they continue to make the case that Wisconsin needs Right to Work? Are you hearing anything new?
Not really. I mean, it is, you've got a couple basic points there. One is that it's a workplace freedom issue, they call it. They say that you ought to have a choice whether or not you want to join a union, and that in some communities, if there's a big employer that pays well, maybe you don't have that choice. You got to join the union, and that's not fair. And so they say that foremost, they call it a workplace freedom issue. You know, the other point that they make is that it's an issue of competitiveness. Big company looking to decide where to locate is going to look at Wisconsin not being a right to work state and potentially won't come here because of that. You know, the retort from Democrats, and in fact, an economist who testified yesterday from Marquette University said that argument is kind of hollow, that if you look at a listing of what firms consider when they're deciding whether or not to relocate, whether or not a state is a right-to-work state is way down on the list, not even on the top 10.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us, and I'm sure we'll be back in touch as it moves along.
All right, thank you.
That was Sean Johnson, WPR State Government Reporter, reporting from the state capitol.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be taking your calls on Right to Work here in Wisconsin. So give us your thoughts. You can get on the line now at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this legislation, which appears to be on its way to becoming law? Do you think it'll help spur the state's economy, or do you have some worries about it? And what do you think it'll mean for unions and for workers in the state? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're taking your calls now about Right to Work in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. What do you think about possible Right to Work laws coming to Wisconsin? Do you think it will spur the state's economy, or do you see it taking Wisconsin in the wrong direction? And what do you think this could mean for the state's unions? Call now at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Go right to our callers. You've got Jerry on the line in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Jerry, hi.
Hi, how you doing? I'm a foreigner from Minnesota, but I did end up working. I had a 26-and-a-half-year career at a public utility, actually a cooperative, electric cooperative. And the last 10 years of that career ended, I ended up having to pay $90 every 2 weeks out of my check because of the lineman managed to vote in a union by a vote of 49-51. So And the other item I'd like to mention is that there have been no new automotive manufacturing plants that have gone to any of the states that are unionized or don't have right to work. They're all going down south where they have right to work laws. And Minnesota did lose the Ford Ranger plant in Minneapolis, and I think our high labor rates and unionization up here were a big contributor to that.
Jerry, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for getting us started.
And we go next to Cindy joining us in Appleton. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. Well, I am opposed to this right-to-work legislation. I think if, you know, we have free will now. If somebody doesn't want to pay union dues, they don't work at a union shop. It's as simple as that. And the Republicans keep telling people that are in minimum wage jobs that if you want to get a better job, get a different job somewhere else or go back to school. And I say to them, well, then we shouldn't have people, you know, saying that they don't have to belong to a union and freeload off the union and pay no dues but still get the representation of the union. I think this is ridiculous. It's going to take us back 60 years in time. And I don't know if anyone else is protesting in Madison this Saturday, but I will be.
Cindy, thank you for your thoughts.
We're taking your calls on proposed what's called right-to-work legislation here in the state, likely to get a Senate vote yet today, then move on to the Assembly next week. The governor has said he will sign it if it comes to him. We'll go now to Jim in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi. I mean, the phrase right-to-work, I mean, it's like who doesn't like the phrase, the right to a sunny day. I mean, it sounds like a lovely thing. But what it generally means is over historically is fewer protections in terms of workplace conditions. And then to those who live in right-to-work states, well, there are maybe corporations that relocate there because they pay lower wages. The decline of the middle class in this country from World War II in the 50s when we had the highest rate of union organization today where we have the lowest is a steady decline of working class and middle class wages, and ultimately the gross inequality that we see within our society today. At no time since the 1920s has there been a greater disparity. There was a vision of America where people would work hard and meet the American dream, and we were co-workers and employees, and now we may be back to the Gilded Age where we will have million owners and servants.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234.
And we go next to Willem joining us in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. The man mentioned that about auto workers and non-union states. In Tennessee, the Volkswagen plant just voted in to be represented by the union, so that's not really accurate. But this is typical of what happens in Wisconsin in this extraordinary session. The bill is introduced. We have like a couple of days to talk about it, they pass it, and that's it, you know. And then the governor says it's not on his radar, which is code for I'm going to do it. And it's just if 11% of the people in Wisconsin are unionized, I just don't believe that because 11% of the workforce in Wisconsin is unionized. That's keeping people from coming to Wisconsin. As far as worker choice goes, you can choose to work in a shop that's not unionized. No one's forcing you to work in a union place because they have better wages and better packages. So if you don't want to work in a union shop, work somewhere else. That's your choice. That's your freedom.
Okay, Willem, thank you for your thoughts.
Still time for your thoughts on proposed what's called right-to-work legislation in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Or if you get a busy signal, you can head over to the Central Time Facebook page and share your thoughts. Mike joins us next in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. So as a former union employee, a former union guy that's now lives in Wisconsin and is a non-union carpenter, the carpenter unions, at least in Chicago and most of the country, require you to get schooled before they give you your union card, before you're a journeyed union guy, which means the company has to pay for you to take classes to learn how to do your job properly and get educated. Now, in non-union shops here in Wisconsin, I noticed that half these guys out here don't really have a clue as to what they're doing because none of them have any formal training. The union is good in that respect. Now, your other two callers ago, had mentioned that a lot of these jobs, automotive factory jobs, are being sent to the South, and that's primarily because the employers don't want to have to pay higher wages. They don't want to pay a livable wage, and they certainly don't want to have to pay you benefits or insurance or any kind of any benefits package of any kind. And they certainly don't want to have to worry about employee safety, which is a big thing for the unions, is employee safety. All the unions have regular once-a-week OSHA safety meetings to explain you what the law requires.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call.
And a quick one next from Kathy in Germantown. Kathy, hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a teacher, so I definitely have that typical perspective from it. And I guess my main thing I would say is I don't think this right-to-work law is going to do anything but perhaps put a feather in Scott Walker's hat to say that he's done it.
Kathy, appreciate you calling.
And we heard from Peter on Facebook, says it's the right thing to do, will not have a significant effect one way or the other. You can keep sharing your thoughts at the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, sugar, eggs, meat, where do they fit into a healthy diet? We'll check out new suggested nutritional guidelines and what they're going to mean for our daily eating habits.
First, the University of Wisconsin-Madison hosted an event last week to acknowledge faculty of color who were hired or promoted in the past year.
The annual Faculty of Color reception was intended also to provide a networking opportunity from professors from diverse backgrounds to learn about each other's work and research.
With us now is Patrick Sims, Interim Vice Provost and Chief Diversity Officer in the Division of Diversity, Equity, and Educational Achievement at the UW-Madison. He's also one of the organizers of the event. Patrick, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Welcome. Well, hello, I should say.
Well, the annual Faculty of Color reception, it was last week. Can you tell us something about that reception and why it's become an annual event?
Sure. So first off, I just got to give you kudos for getting the title right. That's a long one. But in terms of why the Faculty of Color reception is an important staple event for us here at the institution, it's really a way to recognize the brilliance that's among our faculty at this institution. We attract some of the brightest minds from across the globe, and they come in all shapes and sizes and all different colors as well. So from a perspective of a person of color who's at this institution, sometimes it can be kind of lonely, if you will, to think about, well, I'm in my respective corner of the universe and I'm doing my research, and you may not find other people around who look like you. And so sometimes it's great to just have a common experience. It may not have anything to do with your research per se, but based on your own upbringing, your own background, your own lived experience. And when you see all of these bodies together, these brown bodies, these tan bodies, the various hues and colors of the rainbow, you start to feel like you're a little less alone. And that's always a good thing at a place like UW-Madison.
So there's a lot going on there beyond the stated purpose. It was a celebration, too. It was an honoring of faculty, too. What did you celebrate there and acknowledge?
Well, for many of our faculty, hitting the milestone of achieving a tenure, meaning moving from assistant to associate professor, is a big deal. And then, of course, moving from associate to full professor is also a big deal. But one of the things that I think Madison is really well known for, and I appreciate as a faculty member here, is we don't make the investment unless we have the intention of actually having you go through the full process of getting tenure and moving on to full professor. Some institutions have different approaches to how they tenure faculty. So it's really a big deal for us when we, A, have people who want to come and study and share their wisdom and expertise here at the University of Wisconsin. And then more importantly, to have them be part of an ongoing community that their presence is welcome and their input is absolutely appreciated. So we think that's a good thing, and so we wanted to recognize that expertise and celebrate it.
And how would you say the UW is doing when it comes to recruitment and retention of diverse faculty?
Well, that's another conversation. Now, I think, you know, I'll say this. We make a really strong effort to attract people of all walks of life to come to our institution, and we get them. As I said before, we have some of the best and brightest minds. I think when it comes to diversity and inclusion, we probably have more invested in the process to attract individuals of color. Quite candidly, I think our biggest challenge is making sure that we create an environment that's welcome enough that allows individuals to want to stay. So that's what we're wrestling with.
Is that something that you've been looking at closely, looking at particular strategies that you can use? You're talking about developing a community there. What else can be done?
Well, I think events like the Faculty of Color reception is one way. Networking lunches that I host with my colleague, Michael Bernard Donald, who's the Vice Provost for faculty and staff. Shout out to Mike. You know, really showing that we're in coordination, we're tag teaming, that diversity isn't this standalone kind of enterprise, that it's really woven into the fabric of the institution. And the more we think of diversity outside of sort of traditional diversity context, not that those aren't important, but that we think of diversity as something that's central to the experience, that's relevant not just for people of color, but for a majority of populations or white students as well, that that's a good thing. And so we want to create that experience so everyone can partake and enjoy.
Now, what are some of the challenges that a new non-white member of the faculty might face when they come to the UW-Madison or to any of the UW system campuses? Right.
Well, I think, so I'm from Chicago, so I'll just personally say I miss my Chicago radio stations. Although I will admit, I am a WPR junkie, so, you know,
okay,
I actually listen to Central Time, so I'm like, yeah, I get to be on the show.
Oh, good.
That being said, sometimes it's just as simple as, you know, finding a space where things that are extensions of your culture are appreciated and they're part of the norm as opposed to something that's different. Simple example, going to a convenience store. I won't name any names, but you go to a convenience store and you're looking for simple things like hair care products or Band-Aids that have your skin tone. I mean, and the extent to which those things aren't absent, then you have to go out 5-10 miles away to get those things. That adds up being a bit of an inconvenience. But I'd say more importantly, the challenge is just understanding that there are other people who understand that longing for, man, I just really want some good Chinese food or some good soul food, and that's okay, and not feeling perhaps alienated or as if something's wrong with you for wanting that kind of cultural enriching experience while you're here in Madison.
Right, so you're not just talking about the university, you're talking about issues that are affecting all of Wisconsin.
Absolutely.
And city issues, too. Mm-hmm. So this is a big thing.
Yeah, and we know what, you know, Wisconsin is, you know, by default, it is a fairly homogenous state with the exception of certain populations. That being said, what's beautiful about Madison is that we attract all walks of life. There are people from all slices of the globe, for that matter, and being able to celebrate those differences and recognize them and appreciate it is always a good thing, because I think our students are better for it. Certainly our faculty are better for it. And I think institutionally, when we look at our peers and what they're up to, we have the potential to stand out as a national leader in this regard. And so I'm really excited that we're able to do the kinds of programming and build the kind of relationships that we're doing for our community, both on the campus and the community at large.
Now, you've been talking about improving some of the cultural and inclusion aspects for diverse faculty at the UW. Do you think that as those aspects come more into focus, that there is a vulnerability there that the university could retain or could recruit diverse faculty but could lose them?
Well, I don't know if you've been reading my notes, but you kind of hit the nail on the head. We do an excellent job at recruiting individuals, and the minute we recruit some, we lose some. So over time, it ends up looking flat. So some would say, if you look at data from 5 years, you'd see that a certain percentage of faculty of color of this institution is X. And over those 5 years, it's still X. But what you don't see is the incredible effort that's gone on behind the scenes to attract and recruit new faculty. And so there's always a natural churn that happens for faculty regardless of their race. And some of it has to do with pay. But I think when we're looking at it in the context of faculty of color, you know, so you have the pay piece, and then you also have a piece that may have to do with campus climate or the extent to which you feel a sense of belonging. If the pay isn't that great and that sense of belonging isn't quite there, there are not a whole lot of incentives to hang around. So my job as the vice provost and chief diversity officer is to try and create spaces where individuals will feel like we can call this place home.
And what steps do you recommend the university take to get on that path to progress, mm-hmm. not only recruitment, but retention and mm-hmm. creating an inclusive space here at the university and in the state?
Give me more money. No. I wish there were a simple pat answer I could give. It's a multi-pronged approach. It comes at various slices throughout the institution. So starting, I'd say, with faculty, making sure we have a diverse staff as well, because I think staff sometimes get overlooked in these conversations. We emphasize faculty because we know we need faculty. But I would say making sure that our students have positive interactions in the dining halls, in the res halls, in the classrooms, that our leadership is able to message accordingly that diversity is a priority for us. We are committed to ensuring that all students have a diverse, well-rounded education. And it isn't just about people of color. It's about everybody. And people of color benefit the same way majority students benefit as well.
And Patrick, as we wrap up, any thoughts about how the proposed budget cuts to the UW could impact the university's ability to do just what you're talking about here?
Well, they will impact our ability. And it's a real difficult time for us. Our chancellor and provost have been very clear that they intend to honor and maintain and sustain, and dare I say, I'm hoping they'll invest even more in some of our diversity efforts. I'm clear that we do a lot already, and we want to recognize that investment. And more importantly, I think we want to share with others who want to commit to diversity that we're here for the long haul and we haven't given up yet. So those are things that I'm thinking about right now.
Patrick, thank you so much for coming in and talking today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Patrick Sims, Interim Vice Provost and Chief Diversity Officer in the Division of Diversity, Equity, and Educational Achievement at UW-Madison.